welcome to the Thursday, March 16th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city. We've got a great show as usual. We'll be chatting with UIS alumni about the Spring Dinner and Auction Scholarship Fundraiser. Then we'll talk with the JSO folks to find out about the Symphony Showcase this weekend. Then there's a little bit about the Juno Cabaret, the Great American Songbook Concert. And then we'll end with Nancy DeCharney and Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans were among those protesting President Donald Trump's pilgrimage to Nashville, Tennessee, Wednesday. Trump visited Andrew Jackson's historic home and laid a wreath at his grave. The seventh U.S. president signed the 1830 Indian Removal Act, which violently removed thousands of Native Americans from their land. Pam Kingfisher, a Cherokee woman from Oklahoma, says the visit was a cultural slap in the face.
He has signaled very clearly since the 90s how he feels about Native Americans. This just feels like the next step of his thumbing his nose at tribal sovereignty and at tribal nations, and truly at any history of America.
Many people have drawn comparisons between the political styles of Trump and Jackson. Leaders of the Chippewa Cree tribe in Montana are working to resolve a loan dispute, which they say threatens the community's livelihood. Montana Public Radio's Nate Hedgie reports the tribe is cutting back on services after a judge ordered them to make good on a casino construction loan.
The Chippewa Cree tribe in Montana announced Wednesday it will be holding back assistance payments and scaling back the tribe's workforce on Rocky Boys Indian Reservation after a judge ordered the tribe to pay more than $25 million to a loan company. Tribal spokeswoman Shelby DeMars says BEH Gaming Limited, which helped build a tribal casino in 2006, was only supposed to collect money from a designated casino account.
They have grossly overstepped the bounds of that order and have withdrawn funds improperly from a number of tribal accounts, many of which they completely zeroed out.
DeMars says it's still too soon to say which departments and assistance programs were affected.
We're still very much trying to kind of figure out how widespread all the impacts are.
But she adds that, at least at this moment, there are no plans to lay off workers. For National Native News, I'm Nate Hedgie.
The Lumbee tribe in North Carolina is taking a stand against the 550-mile Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Melinda Tuhus reports.
The 55,000-strong Lumbee tribe is the largest concentration of indigenous people east of the Mississippi. Erica Faircloth counts herself among them and hopes the walk along the pipeline route will help generate support from other indigenous people around the world.
What we need to be focusing on is remembering our culture and remembering what's important and protecting burial sites and protecting the lands that we do have.
The current route for the Duke Energy and Dominion Resources pipeline is the third proposed alignment. The first and second were slated to go near Durham and Raleigh and would have been more direct and less expensive. The Reverend Mac Ledgerton directs the Center for Community Action in Lumberton, in the heart of the Lumbee community. He criticizes the process that diverts the potential environmental threat away from what he says are the wealthier, whiter urban centers.
Those two proposals were scratched, and we have this third one that goes through the poorest, most racially diverse section, not only of our state, but most likely of our nation.
The walk ends on Sunday with a rally in Lumberton. For National Native News, I'm Melinda Tuhus.
It's high school state tournament time around the country. In South Dakota, the Rosebud Reservation is making its 12th consecutive appearance at that state's basketball tournament. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Since 2006, teams wearing the White River Tigers' purple and gold colors have made 12 consecutive trips to Aberdeen for state. They won South Dakota's Class B tournament in 2008, ending a 53-year championship drought for the school. The Tigers have won the tournament three additional times since then. Coach Eldon Marshall says the team's success is a model for the players who follow.
When the younger kids see that and they want to be a part of it and they work and so when they do get up there and get older, they're ready to go compete.
White River plays at the state tournament Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
And I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Peace Corps. Volunteers make a difference working in communities in over 60 countries, tackling their greatest challenges in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. Information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and it is 34 degrees out, and it is light snow, fog, and mist. We're looking at more scattered snow showers tonight. Scattered snow showers again. We're looking at about a 30% chance of precipitation, and then tomorrow more snow showers, and then Saturday mostly cloudy with a high near 33. I want to give a shout out to CBJ, the city and borough of Juneau, that's working hard to clean up our streets, and look at your neighborhood signs. They might be cleaning up your neighborhood tonight. So we're going to kick off the show with our first guest. Typically, we start the show with a UAS representative. And in the studio with us today, we have the UIS Alumni Association. We have Lieutenant David Campbell and we have Kyle Malzel. And they are here as board members of the UIS Alumni Association. So welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks, Joan.
Yeah. So let's talk about the UIS Alumni Association. What is it?
Well, it's actually called the Association, Alumni and Friends Association, because some people have the misconception that you have to have graduated from UAS to be a part of it, but you really don't. We believe in casting a wide net, so it's the Alumni and Friends Association. So if you have any kind of connection to UAS and you believe in supporting the university and helping students, then we're a good organization to be in. You could be a grandparent who's got kids that come here. Maybe you like evening vegan. Whatever it is that you like about UIS, and if you want to be a part of it, you can be. So it's a really open organization. But we are a nonprofit, and we do a whole bunch of events throughout the year that we call friend raisers, where we try to keep people just engaged, and we're really not trying to make money or anything. We're just trying to keep people engaged and have a good time. In May of this year, we're having a golf tournament that we do every year, and we usually rent a box suite at Safeco Field for a Mariners game, and we do just kind of fun events like that. So it's kind of a good way just to stay engaged. But once a year, we do a fundraiser, and that's kind of what we're here to talk about today. We have our annual alumni auction and dinner. This year it's going to be on April 1st, which is a Saturday. It's at the Egan Library. It's a closed event, so you have to have a ticket in order to get in. And we have a variety of ways to raise money. We do a live auction. I'm kind of the auctioneer of the event for the past couple of years. It's a lot of fun. We have desserts that we auction off and ticket items of varying prices. We have a silent auction. We have balloons. And it's just a great, fun event. And 100% of the proceeds we end up using for student scholarships. In this age of declining state revenue and declining money for the university, it's really, really important that we can help out where we can. And the Alumni Association, as long as I can remember, going back 8 years, my wife used to be the alumni relations manager. She's not anymore. But so I've been involved with this auction for, gosh, probably going on 8 or 9 years now. But the auction combined with some endowments that we have, we've been able to give away $25,000 annually to students to pursue their education. And it's just a really rewarding experience. Last month we had an event where the award winners came and were able to speak, and we were able to meet them, and they talked about how much the scholarships really did change their lives to where they were able to get their education where they wouldn't have been able to normally. So it's a really positive event, and that's kind of where we're at. And also with me, Kyle is a brand new board member. We brought him along so he can give a perspective on what he thinks of the Alumni Association.
Yeah, thanks. I'm Kyle Mozell. I am new to the board. I graduated UAS with my undergraduate degree in 2004 in biology. and went to work, and then came back to UAS and got my master's degree in public administration in 2015. And so I was looking for a way of staying engaged with the university, scholarships. I depended on scholarships through my undergraduate degree, and so I applied for board membership, and here I am. So I'm really excited. I just started in January, and so this is the first event that I'm participating in, and so it's fun to get out into the community and get donations from some of the businesses and interact that way, and then talk about the UAS Alumni Association and Friends, how we work and what we do. And so it's been really great so far.
Yeah, we definitely believe in throwing people in the deep end of the pool. So brand new alumni member on biggest event of the year, straight out of the box.
Yeah.
Sounds like a hazing. A college hazing. So what time is the event?
It starts at 6 p.m. is when we open the doors. Dinner is usually served at about 7. It is a catered event. Abby's Kitchen has done a fantastic job for us the past several years. Tom usually pulls out all the stops in order to make sure it's a really special event for us. I believe it's buffet format. There is a no-host bar. The auction typically kicks off about 7:30-ish, I believe. The tickets are priced depending on what I guess what your status is. If you're an alumni member, it's $40 a ticket if you're an alumni member. If you're not an alumni member, that's $50. And then we have tables that we sell. The 8-spot tables is $350, so it's kind of like in between the two. But there's only 96 tickets for the event. It's a lot of fun. Raises a lot of good money, and we tend to have a lot of experiences, maybe like a helicopter trip or something like that. So my thought process is, if you're thinking about going up on a helicopter trip on a glacier, why not buy one from the Alumni Association, do something good for a student, and it's kind of a win-win, So you're able to donate money and also get something out of it, as well.
It's, working at its best, really.
Yeah,
like have the local businesses donating, you have local people investing in the university.
Sounds
like great. So where can people get their tickets? Because you say it sells out, and it's like March 14th.
Right. It sells out very, very 16th? Quickly, yeah. The alumni office at UAS has tickets that they're currently selling if people are interested. And I think Kyle might have the number. I think it's 796-6965.
Or they could call probably 796-6000, the main number at UAS,
sure.
And they could be. But that's the place you have to make phone call?
Yeah, you have to call them, and they'd be able to help set you up from there. But
okay.
It sells out every year. It's a great event. The highlight for me is the dessert auction. We have 12 8-top tables. We have typically 12 to 13 desserts. The people just pull out all the stops. The desserts are pretty. We have that chocolate fondue one year, and people really do it well. And then what we try to say is, hey, at your table, pull you guys together and throw money in a pot, and it hopefully we'll have one dessert for each table. And it gets pretty competitive sometimes from table to table in order to get get the dessert they want. And as the auctioneer, I find that to be the funnest part of the evening is the dessert auctions.
I bet. The dessert auction activities in Juneau can get quite entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that was the other thing that I was not told when I petitioned to be a board member, was that I would have to come up with one of those desserts. And so I've solicited the help of my niece to my...
Which is totally allowed.
Needs to bake that cake for me. So
exactly. There'll be some science experiments in your kitchen.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds great. So you heard it here. The UAS Alumni and Friends Spring Dinner and Auction. It's April 1. 96 people are going to be able to attend. It's at the Egan Library. And it's dinner. It's auction. And it's investing in a great community resource. And you have to get your tickets by calling the UAS alumni number, it looks like.
And I just got a text from my wife.
Yes.
Because she's always looking out for me. And it's 796-6569.
Okay. There you go.
6569.
All right. Well, thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you very much for having us.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the writer's almanac for Thursday, the 16th of March, 2017. It was on this day, 1850, Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter was published. It was a time when the publishing business was undergoing tremendous change. Only a few years before, a book would have been printed by a single printer who would have edited the manuscript, set the type, operated the printing press, bind the pages into books, and try to sell them, a very inefficient method. But by 1850, books were being printed by machines, long, continuous sheets of paper fed into steam-powered printing presses in factories. And the Scarlet Letter, therefore, was able to reach a very large audience and become a bestseller. Nathaniel Hawthorne had been interested in the Puritan history of America. One of his own ancestors had been a judge in the Salem witch trials, and he'd come across a historical account of a woman who had to wear the letter A on her chest as a punishment for adultery. He used that woman as the main character of his novel, named her Hester Prynne. And the book begins with Hester Prynne coming out of the town prison, a crowd of people watching. Hawthorne wrote, "When the young woman, the mother of this child, stood fully revealed before the crowd, it seemed to be her first impulse to clasp the infant closely to her bosom and thereby conceal a certain token on the breast of her gown in fine red cloth surrounded with an elaborate embroidery and fantastic flourishes of gold thread appeared the letter A." And on this date in 1850, 2,500 copies of the Scarlet Letter were published and sold out within 10 days. It's the birthday of the poet Cesar Vallejo, born in Santiago de Chuco, Peru, 1892. He was a miner, then he worked on a sugar plantation. In 1920, found himself caught up in a festival that deteriorated into lootings and arsons and was mistakenly arrested and thrown in jail. He fled to Paris. He was poor in Paris, slept on subway trains, park benches for months, eventually founded a literary magazine, published his own poetry, and died of malaria at the age of 49. He's buried in the Montparnasse Cemetery in Paris. And it's the birthday of the children's writer Sid Fleischman, born in Brooklyn, 1920. Started out writing suspense novels, and then to impress his own children, he wrote children's books, starting with Mr. Mysterious and Company and his novel The Whipping Boy in 1986, and a memoir, The Abracadabra Kid. Sid Fleischman, who said, "The books we enjoy as children stay with us forever." Here's a poem for today by Ogden Nash, for Francis. Geniuses of countless nations have told their love for generations, till all their memorable phrases are common as goldenrod or daisies. Their girls have glimmered like the moon, or shimmered like a summer noon, stood like lily, fled like fawn, now like sunset, now like dawn, here the princess in the tower, there the sweet forbidden flower. Darling, when I think of you, every aged phrase is new, and there are moments when it seems I've married one of Shakespeare's dreams. A poem by Ogden Nash for Francis, from The Best of Ogden Nash, published by Ivan R.D., and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's 19 minutes past the hour. It is 34 degrees at the Juno International Airport. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer for the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and in the studio with us is Sally Schlichting. She is here to talk about the Symphony Showcase, this showcases this weekend. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So tell us, what's going on this weekend?
So we have a program of chamber music. We do this every year. The symphony musicians get together and they select some pieces and pull their friends in and perform a program of chamber music. So we have concerts Saturday evening at Northern Light Church at 8 o'clock and Sunday afternoon at 3 at Aldersgate out in the valley.
Great. And where can people get tickets and how much are they?
The tickets are, I don't recall the cost, but the tickets, you can find out more about those at junosymphony.org or get them at the usual outlets.
How long have you been involved with the Juno Symphony?
Oh, my goodness. Since I was 15 years old. And I've off and on organized produced this symphony showcase concert because I really like chamber music myself. So.
And what is it about? First of all, what is chamber music and what do you like about it?
Well, chamber music is music performed in a small setting, usually small ensembles, no conductor. And that's what I like about it. It's more intimate and there's quite an array of repertoire that's available. So you can do, you know, you can do flute and strings, you can do brass, you can do flute and voice, you can do all kinds of combinations. So it's nice. And this program really has a lot of that variety. We have work by our concertmaster. Lisa Ebius is going to perform a solo Bach sonata. It's going to be gorgeous, beautiful. And then we have a piece for tuba and piano, a little more modern. Myself and Jetta Whitaker and Mary Watson are going to play a really wonderful trio by a woman composer from England, early 20th century. And then we have two new works by local composers, Beth Lubowitz and another by William Todd Hunt. And Beth is a member of the Juno Symphony, and she's from the clarinet section, as well as being a composer. And, of course, William Todd Hunt is obviously well-known around town and artistic director for Orpheus Project. So I'm excited to hear those two works. They're both for flute quartet. And then very exciting to have two tangos by Astor Piazzolla, one of my favorite composers, for five cellos, so that's going to be really exciting. And then some major French horn hijinks with Christina and Bill Pollock, father and daughter duo. They're going to play an arrangement of the music from Independence Day, the film Independence Day. And I think it's for probably, I don't know, 10 horns, and they're playing every single part. They've recorded it, and then they're going to play live the last two remaining parts against that. So it's going to be awesome.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. So, yeah, it's a great program. It's just really exciting.
It sounds fabulous. So one more time, the dates and the time?
This Saturday, that's March 18th, 8 o'clock at Northern Light United Church downtown, and Sunday afternoon, Aldersgate Methodist Church out in the valley by Cinema Drive, I think it is, and that's at 3, and there's usually a reception, and tickets are available at junosymphony.org or usual outlets.
That sounds great. All right. That sounds like a lovely, lovely way to spend a perhaps snowy weekend.
That's right. Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming
in,
Sally.
All right, thank you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Thank you.
comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You are listening to Juneau Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. We were just talking with Sally Schlichting about the Symphony Showcase this weekend. And then we have more music in town. We have the Juneau Cabaret, and in the studio with us is Tom Locher, Tom Novell, and Heather Mitchell. Welcome all.
Hi there, Joan. Hi there. Thanks for having us on the air again.
Yeah. So let's talk about
Sunday.
What is going on.
Sunday, March 19th in the Rockwell Ballroom, beginning at 7 p.m., is Juneau Cabaret. This will be, we've done over 30 of these now, and this will be a spring performance. David Shakely, our drummer who ordinarily performs, is away on a trip for his student teaching. So it's going to be Andy Engstrom subbing for David on drums, and we are so pleased to have Andy with us. And then a great lineup of 9 singers, including some newcomers. Keith McCoy, who is here from out of town, acting in the production at Perseverance. And also, we have some returning favorites, LaToya Sharon, Lydia Rail, Erica Lee. And then the other newcomer, Brittany, I think she is going to postpone till a future show. So Luke is accompanying Derek Grimes and Maddie Nolan, who are great perennial favorites at Juneau Cabaret. And it's going to be a great lineup of great songs from the American Songbook and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
7 o'clock at Rockwell this Sunday.
And then Jess Skiba is one of our other newcomers,
yes,
too, right?
Jess Skiba also. And she just performed the role of Maria in West Side Story, Orpheus production. She was great in that, and she's going to be great on the stage at Juneau Cabaret for the very first time, too. So come see her and others 7 o'clock this Sunday at Rockwell Ballroom. It's a pay-as-you-can show. No ticket needed. All ages welcome.
Yeah, and you can get food and drink from Rockwell's. And it's just a great evening of really listening to music in an informal atmosphere. And musicians just playing stuff that they really enjoy.
It sounds great. So, Tom, have you done it? Like, what's your really, Tom?
Well, I've sung for a number of them. It's a great opportunity if you're a singer to, get out there and do a one-on-one with the Tom Locher here on the piano or whoever you get as an accompanist. Great opportunity to do solo stuff and kind of get past the, jitters of the first time doing that sort of stuff and, again, present music that you enjoy. And so it's just plain fun doing it.
Sounds great. So you do this pretty regularly. You do this either once a month or once a quarter. I mean, like, do the Juneau Cabaret at Rockwell every month, right?
Every other month.
Yeah,
the Cabaret.
Yeah, but you have something else going on in town.
2017 has been a really exciting year for Juneau Cabaret and our partnership with, they're called the Friends of the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum, and we've partnered with them to present a lecture concert series in the lecture hall of the new Andrew P. Kasheveroff building over here on Whittier Street, the new State Museum.
Correct.
Heather.
Commonly known as the APK or the SLAM. You could pick your you could pick your initials.
I use my best announcer's voice and say the whole thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
The Alaska State Library Archives and Museum, also known as the Andrew P. Kasheveroff Building.
Very nice.
Right.
So what have you been doing on Saturday afternoons once a month in that lecture hall?
Well, this will be the third in a series of 4, and they've been tribute concerts honoring great American songbook composers. January was Richard Rodgers, a very well-known composer. Second month, Duke Ellington for February for African American History Month. This third one is for Women's History Month, honoring women composers of the great American songbook, and we've picked about a dozen. And a lot of these are songs everyone knows. They just didn't. They probably don't know many of them were written by women. They should come to the lecture concert and find out more about that. Laura Haywood's a great biographer and narrator, and she's going to provide the narration at the lecture concert. Next Saturday, the 25th, 2 o'clock, in the lecture hall of the APK building. The new
Once
state
again,
museum.
It's a pay-as-you-can, and right. just come and enjoy the music.
Okay, so I have questions, as you know I do. So which one of you wants to sing a few bars of a Richard Rodgers song, just so people know what it is? You know, because you say... Perfect. Okay, now let's move to Duke Ellington.
Oh, come on. One of you.
Oh, good grief, I could do one.
Tom is on it, man.
There you go. Okay, yeah. And then one from the women, female composers and lyricists.
See, I'm not sure what you guys have got.
Someday when I'm awfully
Very
low
good, Tom.
And the world is cold, yeah. I will feel right. a joy just thinking of you.
It's a glow, but that was pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Just thinking of you.
Okay.
And the
okay.
way you look
So
tonight.
I... Thank you.
There's
a few bars. And so I've asked this question before, but I'm going to ask it again. So I understand the cabaret. Like, the cabaret is an intimate connection. You mm-hmm. get to arrange. You get to put your own imprint on songs. You
Same.
Connect
mm-hmm.
with the audience. So far, I'm...
Absolutely,
okay,
Joan.
Okay, mm-hmm. great. So let's talk about the Great American Songbook. For the people who are not familiar with that term, what does that mean? Does it mean like all of it has to be from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s?
Much of it is. That's the period of American song that spanned the time before and after World War II. Most of the Great American Songbook was written between about 1925 and 1965, so in that span of time. And the reason Juno Cabaret celebrates that music is those songs have lived on, in part because that was sort of the last popular music marketed to adults in our culture. After that, kids mm-hmm. started to have their own money and buy their own 45 records, and rock and roll sort of took over. In between time, there were crooners and the Rat Pack and so on, but it eventually evolved into music marketed at teens.
So the Great American Songbook, to have a song under that, in that framework...
Yes.
What?
Means to me as an accompanist and sort of a student of the idiom, the lyric is a little more refined, and so are the melody lines. They often follow a formula, though, of 32 bars for the refrain. There might be an introduction. There might be a tag. But ordinarily, a song from the Great American Songbook follows a 32-bar frame, where there's an A section of 16 bars, an 8-measure bridge, and then an 8-measure resolution. And that's how many of the songs are done. And that way, when they're arranged like that originally, they're easy to rearrange and breathe new life into these and restyle them for jazz, for cabaret. And that's one of the reasons they're so flexible and versatile and stay in the, I would say, American lexicon of popular song, is those songs live on because people love to sing them and redo them.
Okay. So you said jazz, cabaret, and then a word... bounced into my head, which was bossa nova. Where does that fit into this?
Bossa nova was a craze that happened in the late 50s. It was sort of imported from South America to North America. But I would say since that time, it is permanently interwoven into the background music you hear in restaurants and hotels. And also the country, the United States, has become more and more Latino in that time. And people from those countries love to bring their music with them. And bossa nova is one of those styles.
Yeah. But it's also can be an approach. So a whole bunch of these songs that came out of Broadway shows, out of Hollywood movies, just written by some well-known and not so well-known composers, but can be performed with a bossa nova approach and a certain,
Any ballad can be restyled as a bossa nova, and many, many of the 32-bar American Songbook songs get restyled that way. Heather's been somebody who has taken, I think she's taken songs and made them into bossa nova, and also samba, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it serves two purposes. You know, one, it's diversity for the singer artistically, because, you know, if I were to take a song and I apply that sort of bossa treatment to it, I'm going to approach the song kind of, it'll be in my headspace a little differently. You know, there'll be a breathier, more coquettish or more sultry than I might do with another style. But it also helps create diversity across the across the performances in one evening. So it's nice to, you know, to switch it up, mix it up, have some jazz waltzes, have some bosses, have some swings, so that the audience gets lots of variety in what they're hearing. So it's both variety for us as artists, but it's variety for the audience. It makes things more interesting.
Expertly said, Heather. Thank you.
So the American Songbook is from the period before World War II and after, to the early 60s.
Yeah.
And then rock and roll was heavily marketed to the kids, and adults were no longer heavily marketed. Is that what I mean?
Well, the music that the adults liked became displaced to a new place. It became more easy listening and adult contemporary. And then the pop music, the pop music became something called American Top 40, and previously that was called the Hit Parade.
That was my question. What followed was Top 40.
Right. Yeah. So songs that made the Hit Parade are some of the songs that are featured in these lecture concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And also on the stage of Juno Cabaret, we always invite singers to do a pop song if they like, but breathe a cabaret arrangement into it. So,
All right. So if you're just joining us, hang on one second, Tom. We'll get back to you in a sec. We are talking with the Juno Cabaret folk. There are three of them in the studio. We have Tom Locher, Tom Noble, and Heather Mitchell. And so this Sunday at 7 o'clock, you have the Juno Cabaret, the iconic piece of Juno community at this point. It's at Rockwell. It's pay as you can. You buy your own drinks, get your own food, listen to an assortment of 6 to 8.
I think we have 9 singers.
Nine singers.
Each one does 2 songs. It's a fairly short show, about 1 hour and 15 minutes with a short intermission.
That sounds great. So that's Sunday night. It's family. It's
family
friendly. You know, it's spring break next week. If you want to expose your kids to a different type of musical style or delve deeper into it, by all means. And then they have their monthly series at the APK Slam Building, the new State Museum, which is a fantastic piece of architecture. And this month is Women's History Month, and they're honoring female composers with female singers. And that's Sunday at 2, not this Sunday, Sunday, March 25th.
Exactly.
Actually,
right.
Saturday.
Okay,
Saturday,
never mind. Saturday,
yeah.
March 25th.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Great American Songbook Series. So I have one last question in parting. So about this Great American Songbook Series, it's a new series created in 2017 in partnership between the Friends of the State Museum and Library Archives and the Juno Cabaret. For each of you, what's the best thing about it so far?
I love the lecture hall and the grand piano that the museum bought for the lecture hall. It's a very nice space for listening. It's a good space to hear a short lecture about composers and their contribution. It's comfortable. It's an accessible building with on-site covered parking underneath. And a lot of patrons of this sort of music who are not able to come to Rockwell Ballroom on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock can come to a lecture concert at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And we feature excerpts of songs from these great composers and try and present a lot of different music to the people who attend. We've had really good attendance at the first two, and we are hoping for even better attendance at the coming to this concert, March 25th and another April 29th, honoring Cole Porter.
Saturdays, 2 p.m.
Yes, right, yes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, just hearing the evolution of some of the composers, on the ones that focus on one composer, you can see how their own music evolved from the early in their career to later.
Sounds great. And Heather?
So, of course, they took all of the good ones. But, no, the one for me is in terms of being able to provide context with the lecture for composers, and as he says, you can see the evolution, but it also gives you context for the circumstances or the conditions in which certain songs or certain combinations or certain shows are written. And, you know, maybe it's just the book nerd in me that really likes to know the story behind the story, but I feel like it really is a nice marriage. There's not too much talking, but there's just enough really carefully curated, peppered, you know, vignettes to help everybody there enjoy the music so much more with just a little bit of information.
Right, because, you know, when you think about this one, the Women's History, Female Composers and Lyricists in the time frame that you're talking about, and then last year was Black History Month, and so the African-Americans that were just, you know, these people that influenced American culture in a huge way.
Yeah.
And Laura was able to lecture a lot about the cultural context then, and she'll talk about that some at the March lecture concert, mostly about how these women were able to thrive in a very sexist setting, you know, mm-hmm. and still be able to write songs that have lived on and are still out there.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, thank you for doing what you guys do.
Thank you so much,
all do. No, no offense, Heather. And check it out. 7 o'clock Sunday night at Rockwell, and then a week from this Saturday, March 25th, 2 p.m. at the library, at the museum, the State Library and Museum.
Right in the lecture hall.
That's okay,
right.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Few backyard birds are as beloved as the black-capped chickadee. The boldly patterned chickadee is perky, trusting, and it even seems to introduce itself to us by calling out its name. In spring, black-capped chickadees also voice a sweet series of notes that sounds like, "Hey, sweetie." And from a chickadee's point of view, there's a huge difference between and. The springtime means something like, "Ladies, I'm a male chickadee looking for a mate. You other guys, get lost." Technically speaking, is a song, a seasonal vocalization specifically tied to mating and territory. When a chickadee voices its namesake, however, it's a sound categorized as a call. Calls, distinct from songs, are uttered by both sexes and may be voiced year-round. Chickadees call to one another as the pair moves about, as a way of remaining in contact. Black-capped chickadees also voice a host of variations that may scold a predator, give an all clear, announce a food source, and more. So, those perky, acrobatic chickadees, yes, okay, they're cute, but they're also clever. Hear them at birdnote.org.
Support for KXLL comes from the Hangar on the Wharf, celebrating St. Patrick's Day this weekend with live music Friday night with DJ Manu and Alex K and the Unmentionables. Details at hangaronthewharf.com/events.
It is 16 minutes to the hour. You're listening to the Thursday, March 16th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and we end the show every Thursday with a representative from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council to talk about arts up, what's going on in Alaska's capital city. And in the studio with us is Nancy Detrani, the executive director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hey, Nancy, do we have to start sleeping now, taking naps to do everything we need to do this weekend?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, it's St. Patrick's Day, and it's the start of To Kill a Mockingbird. We got the preview tonight at 7:30 over at Perseverance, and then going to run for a couple weeks, and you're going to wake up one day and go, "Dang it, I missed that." So get your tickets, make your plans.
Opening night tomorrow, right?
Opening night is Friday night. Let's see, we've got also tomorrow a March for Salmon at Marine Park. The way the weather is, you could probably swim for salmon. It is a little sloggy out there. March with the Alaska Youth Environmental Action from Marine Park to the Capitol Building. And the speakers will start at 4:30. There will be grilled salmon for all at the Capitol steps following the march. So you can RSVP to Facebook so they know how much salmon to get. I think that would be good. And you can get all these details about these various things by going to our website, jahc.org, to the calendar, or to your website, ktoo.org, and looking at the calendar. On Friday from 4 to 10, Lancome and Nordstrom's are going to be over at Prospector.
Ooh.
Doesn't that sound like fun? Doing current makeup trends. Okay, so there will be a gift with purchase. So you can call the Prospector and make an appointment. There's palm frond painting with Louise Miller's Fine Art Studio from 6 to 8 on Friday. At 6:30 to 7:30, there's a fireside chat, the restoration of the Oxty Totem Pole. This is takes place out at the Mendenhall Visitor Center, and they usually do two presentations, one at 6:30 and one at 8. It's free. He said cut that off. I don't know. Oh, it's canceled. I'm sorry. So stay tuned. It'll be around another time. There's a Blarney Bash at the Red Dog Saloon from 7 till midnight. It's the Rotary Club. There's a new Rotary Club in town. So our town now sports 4 Rotary Clubs. And this new one is having a Blarney Bash. Tickets are $30, $35 at the door. Gets food, green beer, whiskey tasting, kamikaze karaoke prizes, dancing, a party. Get your Blarney bag full of Irish goodies to get your night started.
Sounds fun.
Sounds exciting. And then there's also a St. Patrick's Day party with Fire and McGinnis out at McGivney's in the Valley. Also, they're having green beer and Alaska's only Celtic rock band. So go on out for that. It's going to be a wild time. St. Patty's Day at the Wharf, also running from 9:30 to midnight. DJ Manu at the Hangar and Alex X and the Unmentionables in the ballroom. So there's a wild time all weekend long on Friday night. And then you can get up in the morning and go have Pilates with Abby at the Yoga Path. there's also on Saturday from 11 to 5 free tax aid preparations, IRS certified and AARP sponsored. It's primarily to serve people 60 and over or people who can't afford a tax preparer. So if you need a little help, go on out for that. It's at the Nugget Mall, the Juno Masonic Center Dedication and Open House at 9315 Glacier Highway. They're going to officially open their doors. Again, the Nordstrom Landcom folks will be over at the Prospector. There's live acoustic music or bluegrass at Bowwinkle's from 4 to 6. The OWL, the Let's Hoot Together, the Mendenhall Public Library's Audubon Society members will provide information and images about owls in our neighborhood. So come on out for that. That's free. We've got a symphony showcase. You've already spoken about that. That's at Northern Light Church on Saturday and also on Sunday, I think, is the one on Sunday is in the Valley.
Is that Aldersgate?
Yeah, it's nice of them to split that up. Club Baby Seal from 9 to midnight is at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, stand-up comedy featuring Brady Ingaloo, Alicia Hughes-Scondis, Nate Williams, Allison Holtkamp, and Corin Hughes-Scondis. So two shows, 9 and 10:30 p.m., go on over to the Goldtown Nickelodeon and have a good time. There is is this Sunday? It is. There's the ukulele, weekly ukulele jam, and the symphony showcase, and To Kill a Mockingbird, and an international thing, and the Juno Cabaret. But we're having Kahula Nui, the Hawaiian dance party, because it's sort of rainy and icky here, and you wish you were in the islands. This is your opportunity to go there. It's great dance music. You can get tickets at the door, tickets at the Jack, tickets at Hearthside Books. There will be a bar, an Ojos bar, so if you're going to bring your kids, make sure you come with them.
That's at Centennial Hall.
It's at Centennial Hall. It's at 7:30 on Sunday evening, and I know it's spring break, so it might be a nice way to kick that off, and that means gold medals probably happening too, so lots of that going on. From 4 to 10 p.m. at the Hangar on Monday, Skiers Friday, the Jones Snowboard Giveaway at the Hangar. This means happy hour food is 4 until the kitchen closes, and they're giving away a snowboard from the Alaska Brewing Company. So
cool.
Go there.
Yeah.
there's a Tlingit Language Learners also at the Downtown Public Library Monday evening from 6 to 7. On Tuesday, which I think is officially the start of spring, right?
Looks like spring outside.
Let's check that out here. We have an arts roundtable at the Arts Council from 5 to 6:30. Grants are coming up, being due in the middle of April. If you started to write a grant and you want somebody to help read it to make sure you're saying things clearly and such, that's what we're going to be doing at that roundtable. If you have questions about applying for grants, come on down for that. From 7 to 8 p.m., Tibet, Mount Everest, Mount Kailas, night sky at the Murray Drake Planetarium. The Himalayan mountains are the highest on Earth, and the night sky views are the best on the planet. So it's going to show that over there. On Wednesday, Write for Your Life from 10 to 11 out at the Mendenhall Valley Library. There is a peer-to-peer at the Greening Park Learning Center, help you with skills to reduce stress and various other things. So stop in there if you're interested. It's no cost, dinner included. Old-time music jam at the Alaskan Hotel and some children's creative play at Aware. So that we have quite a few things going on, I have to say. And mostly it's St. Patrick's Day and Hawaii.
Yes, I want to talk about that. So tell me a little bit about this band. It's a big band, right?
It is a big band. The man who's the founder of it, his grandfather actually played. When the World War II was happening, soldiers came to the Hawaiian Islands and brought big band sounds with them.
Oh.
And so Hawaiian music and big band sort of overlapped. And this is a really fun, I just have to say, it's very happy music, and it's also hard to sit still when you're listening to it. It's really very exciting. I see that Jeff is queuing it
up
here.
Nancy, why don't you stick around? Jeff, would you like to play something?
Cue it up, and we'll get up and dance, okay? You can watch this.
So that's the band who's coming here. You can't. We're like all moving around the studio here.
Focus,
you can't
focus.
Sit still. I know. So what's the name of the band again?
Kahula Nui. And Puamanu, who's from Hawaii, pointed out that it means the big dance. So it's going to be a big dance, and the musicians are going to offer a workshop on Monday afternoon at 5, particularly for ukulele, and steel guitar. And no skill necessary. All skill levels are welcome.
So, and how do you sign up for that?
You can give us a call over at the Jack. There's an online thing, but it keeps wanting people to set up an account or something, and nobody wants to do that. So call us. We'll put you on the list.
Yeah. stick to the rules. You have to go through this ridiculous process.
Yeah, don't do that.
Just call the people.
Just call the people. And 586 Arts, in case you can't ever remember. But, yeah, I'm really excited about this group. Somebody from who goes to Hawaii quite frequently came back and said, "You got to bring these people. They're my favorite band ever," and I can see why. So, you put your Aloha shirts on, everybody. Jeff's already got his on.
And, well, that's a constant. But put on your dancing shoes, man. You're gonna move. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Nancy, thank you for all you do and
thank
your
you.
Crew and the amazing work that you do.
We'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Okay.
On the dance floor on Sunday.
Absolutely. All right, so here we are. We are wrapping up the Thursday, March 16th edition of Juno Afternoon. This is a live show coming at you from Alaska's capital city and the KTOO studios. It's 35 degrees at the airport right now. We are looking at scattered snow showers. Chance of precipitation this afternoon is 40%. 30% tonight, getting down to a low of around 28. Tomorrow, scattered snow showers mainly after 7 a.m. Cloudy with a high near 34, chance of precipitation 40%. Friday night, we're looking at cloudy with a low around 24. And Saturday, mostly cloudy with a high near 33. So Juno Afternoon, you can listen anytime at ktoo.org. Tomorrow, Andy Klein hosts, and that is always a party. He's going to have two local authors on the show, Bjorn Dill and Kate Troll. They both have books coming out. And then he's going to chat with Charles Ward about the grand opening of the new Masonic Lodge that Nancy was just talking about. And then learning more a little bit about that Balarney Blash. So thank you for sharing your afternoon with Jeff and I. Have a great day.
Beautiful flower of my heart, truly you are sweet as an angel sent from heaven.